February 5, 2023. It's a Wild for Pedro show.
Coltrane laat hierop volgen.
Bovendien word ik zelf op die manier geïnspireerd. En ik kan onmogelijk in termen denken, zoals Elvin Jones dat doet op zijn drums, Jimmy Garrison op zijn bas en McCoy Tyner aan de piano. Daarom ook laat ik mijn wil op het ogenblik niet te veel prevaleren.
Ja, it sort of shapes itself, see, through individual contribution and effort. And that way everybody can kind of develop, you know, and they're developing their own sense of musicianship too, because they have to make their own choices and decisions, you know, musical decisions. Which gives me ideas, see, because I can't think drums like Elvin Jones. I can't think bass like Jimmy Garrison. Nor can I think piano like McCoy. You know, I can't do it. They know much more about those instruments than I do, much more. So it's better for me to not, you know, try to impose too many of the things my ideas on them.
Show, happy Sunday. Started off the show, John Coltrane talked to Michael DeRuiter more about working with his quartet on December 1st, 1962. And then we had, appropriately enough, intro from Curly Brown. Because of those software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, I got with me Chris Pozzolo. Welcome aboard, Chris.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
Well, I'm glad to be speaking with you. Now, can you bring us your earliest musical memory?
Yes, sir. Probably growing up in my with my parents, and there's a lot of music in the house. I just had this like memory of listening to a lot of Tom Petty as a kid, growing up and doing that thing. And my mom would listen to a lot of like Gloria Estefan and clean the house on Saturday nights and throw little dance parties in the room. Me, I remember that really vividly.
And what about this pad you grew up in? Was there musical instruments?
Yeah, like sort of, man. I grew up in Queens in New York, and my dad was a musician.
Ramones, right? Ramones were Queens, I think.
They were Queens guys, yeah. And actually, funny enough, Monty Milnick was the sound guy for the Ramones, and he wound up, he was a tour manager for them.
I know all about Monty. I couldn't remember his last name, but... know his first name. He was a little notorious. When we played with Black Flag, both of us opening for Ramones at the Palladium, Black Flag got half the PA. We got one quarter. That's a Monty thing. And then Monty said, Minuteman, there's not enough room backstage, so you guys go in that little side room. And I don't know if you ever seen the cover of that book Hank wrote, Get in the Van. But that's where they came in. They came in through our, with their shields and their sticks. Yeah, that's a trip. What about Monty?
That's a trip. So Monty, man, yeah, you brought the Ramones, and Monty is a Queens guy. And funny enough, when I was in my early 20s, my girlfriend at the time, Sarah and I, we would film these videos of bands coming up, and we did it at, it's called the New York Hall of Science Museum. It's this cool, trippy little museum in Queens. And Monty is like the AV guy there. This is going back like 10 years now. I don't know if he's still there, but at the time he was there.
Whoa.
And we would be recording these videos, and he's like, you know, I was the Ramones sound guy and tour manager. I was like, what? So what a trip, man.
Oh, yeah, he was notorious. I think maybe Johnny Thunders. I mean, maybe some of the Dolls were Queens guys, too.
They could have been. Yeah. They could have been very well.
But anyway, so you said there were some instruments in the pad, but did you jump on any of those?
Yeah, my old man was a keyboardist. He played a lot like in a cover band when he was a teenager. But he sold all his instruments to buy like a Cadillac or something. He sold all his gear to buy a car. before I was born. So we didn't have instruments, but we had the presence in the house. And funny enough, when I was a kid, I had this toy guitar. And my best friend at the time, Izzy.
We're talking like these plastic dealios, like fishing line strings and shit, right?
100%. Yeah, if that. You know what I mean? It might have been like a plastic touch thing or something. But, yeah, man, he said, man, the guitar is cool.
Oh, you mean like no strings? You just fucking touch buttons or shit?
It might have been some shit like that. Okay. Yeah, I can't remember. But he said, here, man, here's the deal. I'll play this guitar, and you go get a bass. And I said, well, that sounds like a great idea. And
How old?
I was about 12, because I'm about 13.
At 12, you knew what a fucking bass was. I didn't.
I didn't. And so here's the truth.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So I remember going into my mom's bathroom. She was like smoking a cig in the bathroom at 12, and I said, "Hey, mom, I want a bass." And she said, "Well, why not a guitar?" And I said, "I don't know." And anyway, I
oh, you didn't want to tell her you were following orders, huh?
100%, man. So I wound up, she wound up surprising me for my 13th.
Oh, she
thing, got
she,
me this little
present. Okay, bitches.
Yeah, so they got me this little Squire bass, and I took it really seriously from a young age, man.
Let me go back a little further. What about in the school, like the choir or the marching band or shit like that? Did you do anything of that stuff?
No, a little bit. Like when I was in middle school, I had this teacher named Mrs. Rice, and she used to call me Crispy, like Rice Crispy, because my name is Crispy. And I wasn't very good. I played the violin or something like that for like a week, and like the recorder, but not okay. Like, you know, not to any degree of
Chris,
skill.
Chris, let me ask you what record you bought with your own money. First one.
Man, first record I bought with my own money. It's weird. I want to say it might have been like Weird Al.
I've had cats on the show say that. You know, a lot of people, Dr. Demento was the gateway drug to the fucking movement over here, believe it
totally.
Or not, in the middle 70s.
No,
what about the first gig you saw?
Oh, first gig I saw was, it was Steppenwolf. And it was Steppenwolf and members of Deep Purple and like Robbie Krieger playing at the Westbury Music Fair in Long Island. That was also my first pair of breasts I ever saw in person, okay. Funny enough.
Well, probably your ma's when you were a boy.
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you get this bass because your buddy, so he's got a plan. Do you start jamming at his pad?
Not at all, man. He bailed on the thing. It was a blessing, man. It was a blessing.
Oh,
he got me this bass, and at that time, while I was about 13 years old, and my dad, he was a manual laborer, right? So he was out working in the middle of the night delivering bread to restaurants and diners and stuff all through Brooklyn and New York. And one night, I remember that the job he had, he went to work, and the fucking bakery was closed, man. They closed the doors, and he was out of work that night, and he came home. And he rented a U-Haul, and he said, "Hey, you're coming with me." And I went and worked with him on weekends from like 13 to 17 years old in the, you know, in the middle of the night, going through the hood and all these different neighborhoods. But at that time, that was when, like, you know, the internet thing was first coming about. So I would burn CDs, and he'd say, "Hey, how do you burn music? Can you get this?" And it was like, "Can you get Black Sabbath? Can you get Led Zeppelin? Can you get Pink Floyd?" And I never knew what it was, so I would download it, put it on a CD, and him and I would listen to it in the middle of the night, going through New York, you know, from like 11 at night to like 7 in the morning, driving around listening to, you know, Paranoid and Whole Lot of Love and just all that stuff. And that really built my love for like rock and roll and then the Chili Peppers and you guys and
well,
you know,
let me ask you about the bass. This has something to do with that Squire bass, right?
100%, because what happened was, you know, as a kid, you sit around, and then he would put on those records, and I would just play along to him, you know, and figure out what they were doing. And
oh, okay.
Because
you said you got serious on it, and some people, when they say serious, they mean, like, they start taking lessons?
I took some lessons, yeah, and you know what, like, you know, we know each other a little bit outside of me playing. It's more about, you know, I work, you know, in the biz, and that's kind of my thing, but
yeah, but it always helps when you're working with a cat like that who can relate to you because he's done a little bit of it too.
100%, man, 100%. That's why I'm putting out this music too is so a little bit of like empathy for the musicians I work with, right? It's important to make yourself vulnerable and put yourself out there.
Yeah.
So I feel like Right. This is my my offering.
All right, it's your turn. It's your turn. Here, Chris, you gave me this may I with the question mark. Very polite.
Mother, may I start giving all my thanks, and can I stop being so wrong to think it was ever your burden to bear, it was ever your job to care. So may I stop giving all my thanks. Brother, can I get a minute to think about you, them and I can't decide what comes next, vengeance, pain, or pride. I guess I can never decide. I'm vengeance, pain, or pride. I guess I can never decide.
Black skies, part one. Flags push polluted air. There's no escape. Stone rises from its own destruction straight into the sky. Bulldozed and reborn. It's a life and death dance. Listen to the heartbeat. Bass hits hard. Suits in a car. Pistol grip man gets popped in a land of no law. Emaciated skeletal faces, deep drilled veins in a needle wasteland. Watch the sunrise above concrete. Cold streets with no heartbeat. The crime never stops. Fatherless homes and roaming mobs. Dealing dreams in parking lots. Crushed faces in windows. Dogs with savage eyes. But misery into the night. Misery into the night. As the city looks for love in a beggar's drinking cup, the dream is over. There's no escape. There's no escape.
There's no escape. The dream is over.
Hunt, go back, people are free. Not what I call a democracy. Please try, suburbanization. Red, white, blue is cool information.
keep living life this way. Now my silence dreams. Goodbye, shattered dreams. Hey,
y se lamenta. Ineguaglianza.
Thank you. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Show that chunk of music started off with Curly Brown doing "May I," and let the listeners know what you enlightened me to, Brother Chris, with that tune.
"May I" is about, yeah, man. "May I" is about my mom. A lot of respect for family, and I recently did the flip and became a parent myself, and that's a trip, and it, you know, it's a trip in a lot of ways. But that song is a lot of respect and love for my moms and for my family.
Yeah, the moms were big with the Minutemen. All three helped us out big time. And also, like, Mom and Pop with the Black Flag, Regis Skin and Uwe helping out. People don't know about that, but there was some help from the shift before us. After that was Kato Adeki with Fatigue. It's been re-released. Louis Distress featuring Steve Ignorant. Remember Steve Ignorant? He used to sing for, what are those cats called? Yeah, they had the Banksy guy learned his art from these guys.
Is that so?
Yeah, what are they called? Do they owe us a living? Crass. Shit, my memory.
Crass.
And now Steve Ignorant, he's volunteer fireman and a life saver guy goes out in the boats and rescues people. Luis Distress again, Girl in the Mirror. That's her Alone Without Mr. Ignorant. Good rap he did there. Death Tape Super Bass. Just had Brother Alex on, and he's got a brand new album. This is Speaker Brawl, tune off there. Sylvia Castell, Forme Imperceptibili. Yeah, Sylvia Castell. How Would I Be? What Would I Do? That's brand new from Robert Lippick. ECCO from Luke Stewart and Jarvis Earshaw Quartet. Great bass man out of Chicago. I think he just moved, though. Thank you, Zoe, for the turn on. Cunningham, Vote Sarah. This is out of Barcelona. Mark Cunningham from the late, great No Wave band Mars out of New York City. But he's been in Barcelona a long time. Catalan people, right? The Moment is the tune. Handsome Furs after that from Finland. It's Not Me, It's You, in parentheses. And finally, Sick Walt with Punk Almighty. And back to our guest, Chris Pizzolo. Okay, so you got a new gig now, Raising the Next Shift. Okay,
fired up about it. I love it.
So, what about after school? Not graduating, Brother Chris, but this is afternoon time, the bedroom band, the basement band, the garage band. Did you get involved with shit like that?
100%, man. My best friend in the whole world was Paul Piaviab, and him and I would get together and make just tons of noise in his parents' house in the basement, in the bedroom, everywhere we could. He was the drummer, I was the bass player, and we were kind of trying to be like, you know, Flea and Chad at a young age. And
I was going to say Sly and Robbie.
Yeah, totally Sly and Robbie too, man. We did that trip too, for sure.
But your ads are bitching. I mean, they're in a lot of ways, you know, stand up, you know, with the fucking Laurel and Hardy, or Eric B. Rakim. Strong
totally,
Island.
Man.
Yeah, Strong Island. But there's something about, you know, somebody, I was invited on a sports show, you know, that they do the Dodgers, and the guy asked, man, what are you trying to do with the bass, Watt? So I'm thinking about the listeners in this kind of demographic, right? So I'm thinking, how do I relate it to them without, you know, getting lost? So I said, basically, I'm trying to dance with the kick drum. Oh, okay. So I got through to them.
That's a good way to describe it, man.
Because it is trippy, right? Because some people, oh, four-string guitar. But I think it's more a four-string drum set. Yeah, okay.
I love that.
It's got strings. But my test is like the baritone guitar, which is an octave down just like bass guitar. But with those skinny strings, you ain't got the punch. It's a different thing. So you work it different. Now, this band you have with your buddy, was it more of a prac band, a jam band? Did you try to learn songs off records like me and D. Boone, or were you guys composing right away, or were you helping out other friends?
Yeah,
like guitar players, yeah, singers.
Totally. We had a band for a minute. We were called Splash the Cat, and we were writing originals, and we would occasionally do covers. But what was crazy, Watt, was like at a young age, we would book these shows, and I think this is like kind of what influenced like my love for the music business side of things, but like we would book these shows and we would have no fucking music prepared. We would book 45-minute sets, we'd invite all our friends down, and we would just play bass and drums. I'd connect like the whole fucking wazoo of pedals of like the delay and distortion and wah and all that stuff, and we would just rip for like an hour and go nuts, and the kids loved it, man. It was a trip,
so
really experimental.
In the moment it was improvised.
100% improvised. There was we would even do weird things where, like, intentionally we wouldn't talk to each other, like, a week leading up to the show, just to see what would happen when we got there, to see, like, what would the first – we wouldn't say a word as we were setting up.
Do you remember this band Green on Red? That cat would, like, make up words fresh every time.
I don't know his name.
Sam Watterson was in that band. Can't remember this guy's name, but their singer, man, always change the words. He would. that's a trip. He never had to set. No tune had the same words twice. You know, it always have every time they play a different trip around there. How long this lasts? Smash the Cat.
Yeah, Splash was a while. That was like pretty. It was pretty much all that. It was like the high school band. You know, that was like those were the high school years.
So, you were talking about getting into the music racket. Do you? Is that what you do after high school, or do you go to higher education?
Yeah, I did the higher education thing, and the guy that taught me how to play bass when I was taking lessons is this guy, AJ Pappas, and he was playing bass for a blues guitar player named Papa Chubby.
Oh, yeah, I remember that cat.
And Papa Chubby, funny enough, was like, he was a New York guy that came out, like, he played with Richard Hell in the Voidoid, funny enough, but he had built this thing as, like, you know, a New York City blues guitar player, kind of like Bam Bam Bigelow, this, like, bigger-than-life character. And when I was going to college, they would ask me, you know, hey, do you want to be the merch boy? You know, you want to come sell some T-shirts at the gig? And I said, yeah, of course.
What you say here in Pedro is, you want to slang?
Exactly. So we were slinging it. We were slinging the merch. And what happened was, as I was going to college, getting the higher education, I learned how to shoot some videos and social media was just popping up. So what I did was they would invite me to go sell merch, and then I would bring my camera and shoot videos and upload it to YouTube, and the videos would start getting people's attention, and that got the label's attention, and then the label brought me on to do some marketing and all that and work behind the scenes.
Actually, you were kind of like interning for promo without even knowing it, learning by doing.
What? That's 100% it, man. That's been my whole life, is learning by doing.
Yeah. And instead of like having to bullshit your way in, they saw the results of your work, and that's why they brought you aboard.
It was awesome, man. It was a great experience.
Yeah. And there's something that's a little more happening about that, too. So you don't have to, like, you know, get over it. There's a kind of vibe, like, you got to fake people out to get with what you want instead of just doing what you do the best you can, and they'd be into that.
I think that bread van experience really helped me, too. You know, like, getting up in the night and putting in the work and doing it and just going with it. I think being able to go, you know, because this Chubby was touring, man. He, you know, we would go on like a, we went, I think, on like a 2-month European run, where you're in a new city every night. It feels like someone hit you with a brick over the head because you're jet lagged and you sleep 3 hours and you're on your way to the gig. It's like, I paid my dues at a young age just from working with my dad, and it trained me really quickly to be able to roll with it. And I feel really grateful for that experience, because I definitely think it influenced the music and the life beyond it.
Yeah, yeah. So when do you start playing again? Like, you gave me this music here, Curly Brown and Sick Walt.
Sick Walt came first. I mean,
okay.
After that high school band, I just sort of like, I played a little bit here and there, and then I tried doing the band thing like quickly out of higher education at college, and I wasn't really feeling it too much. It felt too competitive, you know. I felt like I was in this beauty pageant, or I was like a debutante ball or something like that, you know. It wasn't my thing. So I just sort of tucked it away. And funny enough, Sick Walt is this awesome, wild man in New York. And I was working at a record shop at the time, and he came in and he goes, "Hey, bro, where can I listen to my record?" And I said, "You can listen to it here, man. Throw it on. Let's listen to it." And we were playing it. I said, "Damn, this sounds good, man." He said, yeah, it's great. I said, "Why don't you play at the shop?" He said, "I would, but we don't have a bass player." And I said, "Well, fuck it. I'll play bass, man." And he said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah." So I joined the band, and that was probably about seven years ago or something like that. I was probably towards my mid to late 20s then, and I liked it.
Was the first gig at that record store that you did with them?
I think it was. It may have been. And funny enough, when I was playing with him, that was when I was really starting to exercise my creative, like, music business mind. And I said, "You know, man, you're a far-out character. You know, I don't think you should go through the hustle of playing at the Bowery Ballroom or Mercury Lounge and trying to get people to pay $15 to come see you. Why don't you play at a prison or something like that?" And he loved that idea, and he went through, you know, good on him, he went through the whole process and got me and the band and himself set up in the system. And sure enough, about 6 months later, we started playing prisons in New York.
A prison tour.
Prison tour. Total prison tour. Yeah, we played a women's facility. I think it was the one that Orange Is the New Black was based on. And that was a trip, Watt, man. It was like, you don't feel more alive than playing in front of 150 women that haven't seen a man in a while, you know, playing thrash rock. It was far out.
And that was fucking Sick Walt's idea. No, that was your idea for him, and he got into it.
Yeah, exactly. But he did it. He put in the work and did it, and we did a couple prisons, and it was a trip, man. And he wound up getting connected with Wayne Kramer.
Brother Wayne Kramer. Look, we're going to have to get to that, because we're at the end of the first hour, February 5, 2023. Watford Pedros, our special guest, Chris Pizzola. Hold tight for hour two. February 5, 2023. It's the second hour of the Watford Pedros Show.
a better man. I know that you're not the one you want. You know that you're not the one you want. I know that I'm not the one you want. You know that you're not the one you want.
Where I trap themselves for all to know. And I still come round here.
Where that mess was getting out of hand. It's the punk rock
another day. Didn't have that much to say. I wished him well and I gave him a hug. He said goodbye and he gave me a look. I swear he was never the nice. I guess that's why we were fine.
Pedro Show, second hour, start off with Gemini Season, Curly Brown. We had Tom Verlaine. We just lost Tom Verlaine. Bomb, this is him live at Quasimodo in Berlin on April 3rd, 1987. His own stuff, not TV. Ain't that trippy TV? Same as his initials, huh? Bomb is printing after that time bomb. I City after that. Guided by Voices, Punk Rock Retirement Plan from the legendary Shack Shakers. You got Dwayne Dennison, I believe, on guitar. That project, he's a cargo cult, right? And alumni of Jesus Lizard, yeah. Headboggle after that with Windsphere, Ray Shin, Seed Money. Curly Brown, Who Wants Your Money? So Curly Brown's the other one. That one came after? That's more recent?
Curly Brown is what happened during the pandemic, man. Everything slowed down, and I had not as much going on, so I would shackle up in the little room in the apartment, and I would just record all day, and I probably did about 100-something tracks during that time. It was a real cathartic outlet, and so I decided to put out this music. You know, now for the first time, sort of as myself.
Whoa! So when you were composing the tunes, was it Man Alone?
Man Alone, 100%. And then when I recorded it, I went to my buddy Richie's place, Barking Dog, a little bit up north of the city in New York. My buddy Max Capshaw from Sick Walt played drums on a lot of it. Him and my buddy Jeff Malone out in Nashville for some of it too.
So both projects share the same drummer, man.
For the most part, yeah, most of those tracks on the Curly Brown stuff is my buddy Max, except for I think it was two songs. I go to Nashville a lot. Nashville's kind of like my home away from home. And when I went to Nashville, I said, fuck it, why don't I go to the studio for a day and take a couple of these bedroom demos and do them right. And my buddy Jeff played on that. And then it's me playing guitar and bass and singing and all that.
When you got the tunes together, you actually made demos for them.
Yeah, exactly. I just kept making tracks without anything even in mind. You know, I just said, all right, cool, it's Tuesday, let's hit the old record button and see what happens.
And what do you got in your pad? You got a little recording setup?
Yeah, nothing fancy. It's like a, you know, simple interface. I got a couple of basses, couple guitars and some pedals, and then I use like a lot of like drum programming stuff to kind of lay the foundation. I need to jam with someone, you know. For me, I think coming up on bass, the rhythm is the most important part of the track for me. It's like the foundation of a building. So I would just throw on some kind of drum loop and then tap into that 16-year-old improv show and just start making stuff up over it.
And what about the words?
Words were always the hardest, but for some reason they came a little bit easier this time.
But they would come after. They would come after the music.
Always. Yeah, it always came after. It always started with the drums and bass, or maybe the drums and guitar, and then the words came after. Yeah.
And then, like, did you write on demand, or do you have like a whole trove of words sitting in notebooks or shit?
No. It all came on demand, and you know, funny enough, there's a couple tracks in there that our mutual buddy Bob Forrest helped with.
Bob Forrest, people of Thelonious Monk, he's been on the show.
Yeah, Thelonious Monster, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, named after Mr. Mr. Monk, but Thelonious Monster, Bob Forrest. And Josh, I think he's got a steady gig now because Dave just can't remember the parts for the Jane Addiction songs.
I don't know how with Dave, but Josh is doing that.
What happened was he got over that sickness, but there's some people have a long version of it and don't get let go, and he can't. It's hurting his playing. So Josh, you know, he helped the Chili Peppers with a lot of stuff, and he's been a help to a lot of cats, and he's an incredible musician. But I know he got brought in with the Thelonious Monster Project too. We heard the whole story on that when they both were on the show.
And a lot of the playing, you know, like obviously I grew up on the Peppers. That was like a huge thing for me growing up. But Josh was really, you know, a silent influence on all of these recordings, because I always loved, and I don't think he gets enough credit, but I always loved his tones and his sounds and how sort of like he's a little more Nels Klein, you know, and I think that John Frusciante is a little more Jimi Hendrix. And I like that,
they all are into Jimmy, I think, but I would say John a little more Hillel, little bit.
Totally.
But you can tell Jimmy's, and Nels Klein would tell you this too, Jimmy's big influence. His shadow looms large on, a lot of creative guitarists. Bitching guy. He's up there with Charlie Christian, you know, and, West Montgomery and stuff. Look, you gave me, I want to play some more Sick Walt.
Thank you. all I can be. Throw it intentionally. What's left? The winnings for me.
Watch for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started off with Sick Walt doing Hey Devil. Leah Reed after that with Crumbs Live. This is new, this new music compilation that came out of this gig up in Eugene, Oregon. Yeah, a bunch of very brave musical explorers got together to conviviate, Latin word, fuck, something like that. Pedram Dibba, after that, with For Us Is Our First Universe. Aaron Blake, Storm King, Joshua Weitz, Playground. All this live, all from this gig. And then finally, Curly Brown with Golden. Let me ask you, Brother Chris, what about the, you told me about the process with the Curly Brown, you know, you creating, making demos, showing them to your buddies. What was the process with the Sick Walt?
Yeah, with Walt, it was a lot more like a traditional rock band where we, you know, we bunker up in the rehearsal space, and you know, one of the cats, whether it was Matt or Max, would say, hey man, I got this riff, and we jam on it, and you know, an hour later you got a song, you know, and that was really fun.
And what Sick Walt would come in with the words later on.
Yeah, he would, sometimes he would, you know, sometimes he would let the band do their thing and just sort of meditate on it and,
yeah,
and really take it in. You know, he, kudos to him. He really, you know, he really thought long and hard about what needed to go where and took it really seriously. And I always loved that. And I think that influenced my thing too, you know, just watching him work and see him do his thing.
Now, it was kind of like you guys would establish the, I don't know, mood or something with the music. And they pick up on that, or did he like, hey, I want a song about the devil. Give me some music. How was it?
Yeah,
like?
Nah. It was definitely music first, and the you know, Matt, the guitar player, would come in with some probably insane riff or some, you know, some line, and Max, the drummer, would get so fired up. And I mean, there's no one that hits a drum like Max Capshaw, man. That guy put his fucking foot through a concrete wall if he could. You know, it's like, it's unbelievable. So, and that gets me fired up to just sort of like, you know, just punch it as hard as I could. So we'd have a fun thing, and I think, you know, Max, Walt would be going through whatever he's going through and just put it down, and it would all just sort of come out, and it would be that.
So you're saying, yeah, because, you know, I think drummers are more involved with composition than they're given credit for. You know, everybody's, oh, yeah, they just hold time and shit. But, I mean, it's rhythm music, so they're a big part of it and stuff. So I understand what you mean about him, and especially if the drummer gets on board, it does make things more righteous for the bass guy. You know, it makes it – I mean, whenever you get more than one person playing, I think you're trying to make a conversation that's interesting. And because, you know, an ensemble is that. It's not a series of monologues. Things are all happening simultaneously, so you are trying to get a conversation going. I know it's a little different because you can't be talking over each other, but you kind of, in music, it's kind of like that. You layer it up and you are talking over each other, but you're also talking with each other.
That's like a really fascinating part about the solo thing too. The Curly Brown thing is, you know, how do you create a conversation with yourself? You know, and it's like, part of it is, you know, you're half going crazy because, you know, imagine if you were to walk down the street and see someone, you know, having a conversation with themselves, you'd say, you know, maybe pepper them up with the straitjacket. But it's a trip, man. And it's I agree with you. It's definitely starts with the rhythm and you know, it's a lot of credit to Max for helping make this shit happen.
Curly Brown, it seems it was just springboard. It was starting point. The demos, they weren't, it wasn't like, hey, make it like this, guys. It was just like, I got an idea. Kind of like, now what do you think? Now, what do you want to add? Am I on the right track?
I think so. Yeah, it was really quick. You know, it took a while to get it to where it is now just because of like timing and people not being able to maybe go where they wanted as much as they wanted, you know, a year or two ago. But it was more like, all right, here are these demos, and they were pretty, you know, the structure was there for the most part. And I think if someone had an idea, it's always, you know, I'm always a big fan of best idea wins, you know,
I think that's a good policy, brother Chris. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, February 5, 2023 edition. What Peter's special guest, Chris Pizzolo. Hold tight for hour three. February 5, 2023, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the 23rd edition of Jazz Is Not Dead. Tonight we go back in time to the 3rd of July 1987 for this live recording from the Botanique in Brussels by Compaccident One, featuring Jeff Lee on tenor sax and vocals and computer programming, John Van Rijmen on alto sax, and special guest Byard Lancaster on featured alto saxophone solo. This is Dead Ducks.
trap that was laid for a fool. If this is true, well, it's real bad luck. But what's in a name? Just as long as it sounds cool. Bebop or free, why not just say real fake jazz? Either it swings or it's bad boogaloo. Fusion of funk, it is all razzmatazz. Anything to make a fuss of a tune. If you agree, well, you're all dead. Dark scuffs, just like me, stuck way out in left field. One thing is sure, the business is sucks. Otherwise we would be cats that were well healed. William Byard Lancaster. William Byard Lancaster, saxophones and flutes. John van Rijmenant. Merci beaucoup.
Pedro Show third hour started off with Curly Brown. These times are no fun. Hearing some noise over there on the starboard side of the country. Then we had the March, or in parentheses, or Ornette went over to Cecil's house, but left after about 10 minutes. This is from the Marmalotic Rascals. And we had the Lunar Asylum with Zerodian Bebop. Compaxident 1. Something live. That's the name of a band, huh? Compaxident 1. the number, people. Dead Ducks is the tune. Curly Brown finally. Burnout and Happy. So, yeah, like both ends. Like there's a bummer song and there's a joy song. Seem to be out from the same situation, though, right? Because, like you said, you're in Man Alone mode. 100 tracks worth of demos. What's next for you?
That's a good question, man. I don't know.
I ask that because Curly Brown seems more of a recording prod than a touring entity. Or am I right?
I think so, yeah. Maybe I'll do a show, man. Maybe I'll do one in New York and hop out west and do one and then maybe on to the next thing.
Oh, so you think Curly Brown's done?
I think so. I think it was a time. I think it's a minute and it's an offering to everyone that's been supportive. Maybe it comes back or maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
It's kind of a document of that sitch, right? And with Sick Walt?
So Sick Walt and I and the guys, we sort of disbanded right before the pandemic. Walt's still doing his thing big time here in New York, and he's crushing it. But for me, I think it was one of those things where something had to give. It was either my sort of, you know, mind for the industry side, the background, the behind the curtains, and that was more important to me at the moment, so I sort of slipped out gracefully.
So he still got the same band, but without you?
He moved around some folks and some players. I think that 2020 to 2022 thing really sort of put a wrench in the works for a lot of folks, and I think Walt was one of those cats that experienced that.
But you said he's back, but he's got a new group of guys.
He's got a new pair of shoes. Yeah, he's got a new band.
Okay. I got to check him out. I'm sorry to say that. I ain't heard him yet, you know, but.
I'd love for you guys to talk, man. You'd love him. He's a great guy.
You mean have him on the Watt from Pedro show?
Man, if he could Skype in from Pedro, it'd be a blast.
Yeah, of course. Okay, we'll talk about that offline and stuff. Okay, we got some, what do you got here? More Curly Brown. The winning run's done.
As a sinner, that the sinner's no fun. But I'm sinning my way right now. I can say it as a winner, that the winner's run gone. But I'm chasing a winning right now. So we run and we run till our legs stop chasing. From the time I wasted.
see me walking out the door. Squeezing all my jacket out on the floor. If you were me, you'd do the same. Looking for someone else to blame. Doesn't matter what you think, only matters what you earn. The money you can turn, the money's no concern. That's why I'm taking time to write songs, to write songs.
Music for this edition. Start that chunk off with Curly Brown doing the Winning's Run's Done. The Real Book from End to Z, abridged by Sean Persinger, is Prester John. He was on the show maybe last year. Good cat. Part one of three of Urgent in brackets, Yellow. This is Bob Stagner with Evan Lipson and Mike Bugetta. Something they did with their new project. I think Evan Lipson and Mike Bugetta also are in that Dumb Shit Youth with Steve Gigante. Curly Brown, finally, squeezing on my jacket. Jacket, you know, if you read James Ellroy, jacket's like slang for, I guess, your police record. But maybe you're talking about an actual, like a coat.
Talking about the coat that actually came out of a frustrating label experience where I put out a record with an artist and it's just a rough one, man. So the metaphor just squeezing on my jacket, just pissed off, walking out the door.
Well, speaking of the racket, you know, and behind the curtain and all this kind of shit and that drama. You know, you kind of got in at a time when the labels were going down anyway, right?
I did. Yeah, man. And that was kind of like a blessing in disguise. Like, you know, I was working – I'm a digital whiz kid, right? So a lot of the stuff I do to pay the rent comes in from, like, that knowledge. But when the doors closed in 2020, for most folks, I was looking to license that Bicycle Thief record with Bob Forrest and Josh Klinghoffer. And that just came about from watching a documentary on Bob that I had seen one night late, and I heard the music that I grew up on. I forgot about that record.
We should tell listeners, Bob Forrest, Thelonious Monster people.
Bob Forrest, yep, Thelonious Monster, and there's a documentary called I think it's called Bob and the Monster by Kuta Baruth, and I watched it one night, and I heard all these Bicycle Thief songs.
By the way, it's the band or the prod. It's named after a bitchin'. A movie made a couple years after the Second World War in Italy called The Bicycle Thief.
That movie's heartbreaking, man. That's a
It totally is. I mean, his pop, right? He's got to look at his pop at the end there. It's like, oh, fuck.
Man, yeah. And like, you know, like some ways seeing that, like seeing the old man at like the docks waiting for the work, and that reminded me of like that bread van thing, you know?
And you know, none of those were pro actors. They're all amateur people off the street. Well, it was, you know, after the war, everything had to be econo. And then it got known as the new style, right? And so you see streetcar named Desire, like taking cues off of stuff like Bicycle Thief. But anyway, what happened with this license dealio?
Oh, so what happened, man, was I watched the movie on Bob, and then it just kind of like reminded me of that great record that I came up on when I was in the high school band. And so, you know, digital kid, I went to Spotify, you know, to go listen to it, and it wasn't there. And I said, well, how can that be? And so knowing what little I knew then, I said, well, let me reach out to Bob on Instagram and see if I could put out the record. So I sent Bob a message and said, hey, man, you don't know me, but I love this record. You know, can I put it out? And he wrote, okay. And little did I know, that's not how it works. You know what I mean? So I wound up having to get a crash course learning the real way of, you know, how do you do it? And I wound up tracking down the original label that went out of business, and then I had to find the label that they sold it to and then find out where that was. And funny enough, that record just happened to be sitting on like a digital shelf, you know, for almost 20 years untouched. And so I got a hold of the folks, and, you know, they said, all right, if you're going to license it, you got to pay for it. And I did. And I made the record with my own hard earned money. And I told Bob about it through Instagram, and he and I had forged a little relationship, and he had brought Josh into the equation. And those guys were really, really sweet, man. They were very kind to lend their time and be so willing and open to tell the story of that record. I feel like it finally had got the justice it deserved and got the light it deserved.
And what I remember from their appearance on my show was they were going to plan on doing some future Thelonious Monster.
Yeah, right after that, Bob had done a new Thelonious Monster record that Josh had produced. And then, you know, Josh got called on to some other gigs, but they often talk about another Bicycle Thief record. I know it's something that will happen in this lifetime. They definitely want to make it happen.
That's right. The Thelonious Monster was going to be Bicycle Thief. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. They definitely want to make it happen. Josh is a busy guy, man, it seems like.
Oh yeah. Very much in demand. Like I said, he's going to help the Jane's Addiction cats now. Perry, his date, you know, he's got the sickness, got to get healthy. But, you know, that's the thing about music, you know. The bottom of the ninth, pull it out, right? What do they call those
that's
guys?
The guy
closers?
You want
to, yeah, closers.
You, want
to yeah, right.
You need the closer, man. That's
Josh
who that, you know.
Definitely
yeah.
A closer. He's a great cat. And so if people want to know what you're doing, do you have a website or do you just go to those commercial, like,
no.
What'd you say, Instagram?
Yeah.
And
just the social media,
Spotify.
Man. If you want to listen to it, just you know, I'm on Instagram
there's no Chris Pizzolo. Because when you have your own website, it's like having your own fanzine. Maybe one day you want to do that.
My label and my company, it's called Immediate Family. That's where I do everything. So if you wanna find me, all you gotta do is look up immediatefam.net, and that's where I'm at.
Okay,
you can find
okay.
Me right
there's
there.
A website you can check out Chris's stuff, people. Immediate Family. Traditional spelling, right?
And then on the website, immediatefam.net.
Oh, fam, not family. Okay. Immediatefam.net. A little breathe there. And, well, man, whatever you're doing next musically, ain't going to be fucking Sick Walt. It ain't going to be Curly Brown, but it'll be something. And when you feel the hankering, get it down, get your buddies to help you record it, and then will you please come back on the show? We can listen to it.
I love
talk to it. Okay. That's bitching. Most bitching. Thank you so much, Brother Chris, for coming on the show. People, it's been
Thank
the
you.
February 5, 2023 edition of Walt Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.